Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. It is Mom and I today.
Yeah.
We are sitting, this is a new era, guys. I have my two youngest in your bedroom, Mom, playing in hopes that maybe they're going to stay there the whole time we record this. Both Brooke and Dad are out of town, so we'll see how this goes. If you hear like little footsteps coming in, then it's not working so well. But parents of really littles, they do get older at some point, and they play for like long stretches.
Yes, yes.
It's amazing.
And get along.
Yes.
It's amazing.
For the most part. You know, there's still lots of moments, but we're going to talk today, and this will be funny because I just told the girls, if you guys get in an argument, you need to work it out yourselves because I'm not available. But Mom and I have just been talking about this whole idea of mean girls, and I think we can all know exactly what that means when you hear that. I mean, there's a whole movie on it that is absolutely hilarious, but so incredibly true. That especially young girls in the beginning of adolescence, all the way through adolescence, sometimes well beyond adolescence, we are always going to be exposed to girls that are just hard and who seem to want to make your daughter's life harder. And sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's really obvious and overt. But we've just been talking about like, how do we respond to that? How do we help our kids through that in a loving, biblical way? And how do we help our kids not become that? So
especially that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we do not in any way have all the answers. I feel like I'm right in the middle of this with an 11-year-old, but then have two more girls coming after her. And obviously we all know what's happening in our world, what's been happening for years and years with social media, with digital culture, where we can say whatever we want with no face behind it. Yeah. And is it any wonder that our kids are also being affected by that, that we just are tolerating a level of speech that we never would have tolerated before, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is not new.
And it comes from some of the highest places. I mean, a presidential election. You know, I will remember even as an adult where you always spoke about others who you were opposing with some level of respect.
Yeah.
And that is just out the window anymore. So it's coming, unfortunately, at our kids from even places of authority that ought to know better and do know better.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're hearing it. As much as we try to shield them from it, they hear it. And I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot before. The point is not to shelter our kids so much that they never have any exposure to anything.
No.
Because that doesn't actually serve them in the real world.
No.
It's to equip them. It's to teach them that there will be whatever word you want to use, mean girls, bullies, difficult people,
mm-hmm. persecution,
the Christian way of saying extra grace people. They're like,
I haven't heard that one. Extra grace people. Okay.
They're going to encounter that their whole lives. So what do we do about that? And Mom, you had done some work around like, what is a mean girl?
Well, I just did a little bit of an internet search to see how widespread this is. And actually, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I kind of was. There are just articles and studies and government studies highly funded about what this whole thing of mean girls are. What really struck me is that even defining what a mean girl is, one of the studies said that mean girl behavior is often relational aggression. Hmm. And I liked that term because it's rarely physical. It's rarely pushing and shoving or doing something really that somebody could spot. It's controlling behaviors, relational aggression, kind of a social bullying. Those who engage in this kind of relational aggression have three kind of ways that they do it. They want that person to look bad to others, which is your first indicator that this is a real mean girl bullying situation. They want to bring them down and they want to take away what the other person has. Envy is also very much associated with this kind of behavior. So, you know, I also struck me as how seldom it is spotted by adults. Mm. So, and how often kids go to an adult authority figure, a teacher, their parents, and it's minimized, which is really sad because it's subtle enough that it's easy to overlook. Mm-hmm. And yet that very subtlety of mean girl behavior is incredibly damaging. Incredibly.
Do you think it's subtle or do you think we're too busy to notice?
I wondered about that too. Too distracted to notice.
Yeah.
Don't want to take the time to address it. So we hope it just goes away. We hope our child is being oversensitive. And that's just the way the world works. I mean, you hear all this all the time.
Yeah.
When in reality, your child is being wounded and damaged at sometimes at very crucial times of their lives.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give. Yeah, and you know, we say this a lot to our kids, but every mean girl, every difficult woman, has a story.
Yes.
They're not just, it's very rare that they came out of the womb like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're operating out of a wound themselves, which can begin at such an early age and as simple as it all comes out of the way they related to their parents, what they did or didn't get from their parents. And it's so easy to just be angry and point the finger and call that person other.
Mm-hmm.
But man, what if we could learn to spot it and to teach our kids that their first thought would be, I wonder what that girl's story is.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is compassion and empathy. And I don't know. I just think, I don't naturally think that way, but as I've pressed into that more, I think the more you do your own like healing work, mm-hmm. the more empathetic you become, hopefully, at least for me, of understanding.
Yeah, for sure.
Somebody who's responding in this big response, there's something there. You stepped on something.
Right.
And man, can you imagine if all of our 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds were seeing that in other people and able to recognize, oh, that girl's really hurt.
Yeah.
You know, versus... Yeah. I hate that girl. I can't believe what they did to
me. Right. What is that saying? Hurt people, hurt people.
Yeah.
If that's a pretty simple way of helping our children see, helping our daughters see that if somebody's hurting you and it's intentional, mm-hmm. and they know when it's intentional, that's a hurt, wounded person. That doesn't make it hurt them any less, but we don't want to then take our hurt and lash out at others.
Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit into, I know we're going to talk about like, what can we instill in our kids to help them not become that. But let's talk first about how do we teach our kids to respond when they're wronged, when they're targeted, and when they have to be, I'm just thinking of like prime example of a classroom. Like when they can't get away from it because they see that person every day or they see it, that person at their homeschool co-op or it's not as simple or it's the next door neighbor or it's not as simple as like, well, we're never going to see them again. So let's move on. But when there is a continuous exposure, how do we teach them to respond? I'll let you go first because I'm right in the middle of learning this.
I think the main thing for us as parents is that we have to just put everything out on the table. Nothing's hidden, nothing's secret. I didn't grow up in a home that talked about things like this. So if I'd been targeted, and I do remember being targeted, I never would have entered my mind to talk to my parents about this. It just, we just didn't have that kind of a relationship. So I would say the very first thing is we want to make sure we're cultivating a relationship with our kids at home, with our entire family, between siblings, around the kitchen table, of we just talk about things and pipe into each other's lives. It is all of our business. When one of us is being wounded by another or abused or bullied or just been treated meanly on purpose, targeted. Yeah. It's all of our business. We're a family. We're not just a bunch of individuals. So I would say maybe, first of all, you're trying to cultivate that from a very young age is it matters to us. Yeah. So we don't minimize it. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the phrase that you use, Elizabeth, a lot? I love this with your kids. Wish I had known to do this. Like, what did you say?
What's coming up for you?
Yes. What is coming up for you?
Yeah, that was not something I came up with. That was something that a therapist asked me all the time.
Yes,
and it ended up being the best phrase for our kids because it teaches them self-awareness really quickly to pause and take a minute and ask themselves, what am I feeling?
Yeah.
And so—
It's a non-shameful way of saying it because I think I would have said to you guys, what are you so upset about? Why are you so upset?
Yes.
Which immediately kind of puts you in a defensive position instead of this. Your question is so much more inviting. Mm-hmm. What is that bringing up for you?
Well, and sometimes it's really hard to ask that, especially when they're mad at you and they're over-responding to you, to put how they're talking to you aside for just a minute and say, what's coming up for you? Obviously, you're feeling something.
Yes.
But when you can do that, and obviously it takes a bit. Most at first they say, I don't know. But when your kids get a little bit older and you know them or you know their story or their patterns, you can ask things like, what's coming up for you? Are you feeling rejected?
Yeah.
Like I have one who a feeling of rejection is like really hard. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes that's what's coming up for them. So you can ask like more specific questions. Are you feeling rejected? Are you feeling wronged? Are you feeling, you know, you fill in the blank. But I think it's such a, like you said, it doesn't put you in a defensive posture. It puts you in a curious posture because you have to start to ask yourself, what is coming up for me?
Yeah.
What is it that I'm feeling? And you can suggest things like, are you feeling rejected? Mm-hmm. Do I have that right? Mm-hmm. And they might say, no, not at all. I'm mad. Okay, you're mad. Mm-hmm. What else are you feeling? You know, because mm-hmm. that's just masking some other emotion. Mm-hmm. But I think it is, that's just a phrase that's been so helpful.
And then you're actually teaching her to, later when she's an adult and somebody's been rude, her husband hurt her feelings, mm-hmm. for her to take a moment to ask, okay, I'm feeling really big emotions right now. And before I just let it all out, mm-hmm. I need to examine myself mm-hmm. and with Jesus.
Yeah.
Say, God, what is this I'm feeling right now? Yeah. I don't understand why my emotions are so big.
Yeah. I do it all the time. I like sit with my journal and start to like try to figure out what's coming up for me.
Me too. Yeah. And I use the phrase always, what is this about?
Yeah.
Because for me, it's always about something other.
Yeah.
So I think cultivating a family converse that talks about these things, that doesn't put you on the defensive, mm-hmm. that accepts your intuition that you mm-hmm. are being bullied or somebody is being mean, instead of immediately saying, oh, you're just overdoing that. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the first thing.
Or even before jumping to try to do something about mm-hmm. it. Like I'm thinking of the parents who it makes them angry. And so they're just immediately like, I'm going to go talk to the mom, or that's not okay. If we're not careful, we can, like we're talking about, miss the child right in front of us to first just acknowledge how that made them feel.
Yeah.
You know, because then you can have a beautiful conversation about what should be done about it that's not reactionary mm-hmm. or angry.
Right.
But that is, I don't know, it gives you a minute for everybody to calm down.
Right. Now, when I was looking this up online, I was disappointed to find that most of the advice was the parents shouldn't get involved, really. And I just so disagree with that. You know, I just need to say it out loud. I just think if you do that, the one with the least tender conscience always gets their way, always wins. Yeah. So I think a parent sometimes does need to get involved. But first of all, empowering their child to deal with what her own feelings are, mm-hmm. and to at least attempt to, I don't know, to push back or to open up a conversation with the bully. And sometimes I realize that's very naive.
Yeah.
That's maybe when it's kind of a gentle or a more minimal. But I also know that there are some really vicious tone out there, especially over cyberbullying and the mm-hmm. internet.
We have a new offering for you. If you'd like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
I'm just thinking of the parents listening who are probably asking, okay, at what age do you get involved? And what age do they need to try to work it out? Mm-hmm. Because I do think there's a certain, maybe it's not age, but maturity level where mm-hmm. where the first step is talking to them about it at home and then coaching them on how to have the first conversation with the person. And then maybe stepping in if that conversation doesn't go well.
Agreed.
We've had to do that multiple times.
Yeah.
But I think that's more of a maybe maturity level of the kid versus a specific age.
Yeah. Knowing that that's your goal.
Yeah.
That you would be able to coach your daughter along, even if at the very early ages, obviously, especially if you see physical aggression in toddlers, you intervene.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you do have to go talk to the mom mm-hmm. and it rarely goes well. Yeah. So just don't expect that to go well.
Yes.
I think also we can show compassion towards the mean girl without making any excuses for the way she's behaving.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. When you show compassion, your daughter may feel like you're not being loyal and you're not on her side. So,
yeah.
So show this kind of compassion. And yet the understanding is what we want for our Christian daughters, especially, is to know that there are boundaries.
Yeah.
And that it's not okay for people to cross those boundaries. And being a kind, nice girl doesn't mean that you have to take it.
No, it's that when we've talked about the difference between being a peacekeeper and a peacemaker.
Yes.
A peacekeeper just does everything they can to keep the peace.
Right.
I can have those tendencies. So talking to the mom is super hard for me. But a peacemaker is willing to have the hard conversations in order for there to be peace.
Yes.
And I mean, you just, we were talking before we hit record of just even look at how Jesus talked to the Pharisees.
Wow.
It was
so
not this
stern.
Gentle,
mm-hmm.
you know, super meek. I mean, it wasn't mm-hmm. flowery mm-hmm. at all. And mm-hmm. it's interesting because that's always my go-to, like mm-hmm. kill him with kindness, be as nice
right.
as possible. And I was coaching one of my kids through a situation like this. And she was really feeling like she needed to kind of stand up and say something. And I agreed with her. And I was coaching her on how she should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said something
like
you know,
telling her what she should say.
You know, that is not very nice. It really hurts my feelings when you talk to me that way. Please don't talk to me that way. And my son, Duke, he like chimed in right away. This was at their like co-op on during recess, like is a situation at recess. And he chimes in like fiercely and he's like, "Mom, if she does that, she will get laughed in the face and it will get 1,000 times worse." And I like didn't really listen to him, just pushed back. He's like, "You have to be way more direct than that." I was like, I don't think so. I think you can be just really kind. And he kept pushing back. I mean, this went on for days. We had more. They would come up again and he'd be like, and Scarlett would chime in. "Oh, yeah, Mom, I would never say that. I'd rather say nothing at all." Huh. And I wasn't listening very well. And they just kept saying, "Mom, the world is not like that anymore.
Yeah.
You can't talk like that.
Yeah.
You have to be more direct." And as I started to listen to them and realize, I think they're kind of right. I think because like the culture has gotten so toxic in the way that we speak to each other,
mm-hmm.
the nice kind of quiet, I don't even say nice. You can be nice with being, by still being direct, but the quieter, gentler, it's just, nobody hears you.
No.
It's just not.
No.
And so I just had to start to listen to them. Okay. I trust you that mm-hmm. you know that culture that you are in, that I'm not in all the time. Mm-hmm. You know it better than I do. Mm-hmm. But I think with that, there's so much, once our kids have a phone or access to mm-hmm. technology of any kind, there's more communication happening than that's happening in our kitchen.
That's right.
Or that we can pay close attention mm-hmm. to. And I know there's so many mixed schools of thought, and I'll be the first to say I'm new at this. I have a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old who share a dumb phone. But I think we have to be monitoring how our kids are speaking to each other.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a Instagram account. We're trying to get him on the podcast. I think it's called Protect Young Eyes. And he's just doing amazing work in just educating parents on all the different apps, all the different phones, mm-hmm. how to make something safe, what's safe versus what's not safe. He's not anti-technology at all. But his whole thing is, it's not ever your child's phone. It's your phone that you're letting your child use.
Yeah.
And therefore, you hold all the cards.
And computer and tablet.
Exactly. It's my technology as the parent that I share with you.
Yeah.
And so I think when you're approaching it that way, it's not like I'm invading their privacy by understanding what's happening, especially when they're a little bit younger and they don't have the self-control not to react when they're mad or say something nasty. Or it's our job to teach them that there is no body language being read over a text message. So you mm-hmm. can get a text message that sounds not very nice and the person just didn't use punctuation.
Yeah.
And they didn't mean at all. And a middle school girl can spiral really quickly and convince herself that the girl is being nasty when the girl's not being
nasty.
So we have to teach them like proper text etiquette, how to use punctuation and emojis to try to like yeah. communicate emotion. We have to teach them not to read into things that don't need to be read right. into. Like, and we can't be doing that unless we're a part of the conversation
yeah.
with them.
And we're looking over their shoulder, yeah. you know, and we're actually also looking over their shoulder to how they answer back.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. because you know, it can go on to a terrible spiral.
Yeah.
One person's mean, the girl's mean back, and then their friends start taking sides. And all of a sudden, you've got two groups of girls kind of just being mean to each other. And it spirals out of control. And as parents raising passionate Jesus followers, mm-hmm. we need to follow the way of Jesus, right? I mean, the way of Jesus is in Ephesians 5:2, live a life filled with love for others. Following the example of Christ, who loved you and gave himself as a sacrifice to take away your sins. Or the one that we memorized when you kids were little, just about guiding relationships. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of malicious behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Mm. This is what we're trying to teach our kids in response.
Yeah.
And to keep them from becoming a bully who's trying to control. You know, bullies have controlled the world, World War II. Think about it.
Yeah.
Hitler was the ultimate bully. And it worked wonderfully for him for a really long time. So we want to be nipping that in the bud with our kids and say, this is not, we don't talk to each other like that in our home.
No.
And we don't talk to other people like that. Nobody deserves to be talked to.
No, no. Even if you're being spoken, you know, often the argument between siblings is, well, they said that to me.
You started it.
So it was okay, you know. Yeah. And I can't, I mean, I feel like
no.
20 times a day, I'm saying that doesn't make it okay.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Your response is mm-hmm. your responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that's, boy, I wish, honestly, I wish that reached the highest echelons of our politics in the United States. I really do.
And it's such a tricky dance because that doesn't mean, I think for so long, Christian culture especially, boundary was a dirty word. Mm-hmm. Now it's used so much. Everybody's putting up a boundary for something all the time. But
Which meant pushing people away. It didn't mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that boundaries can be a gift in establishing healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously I think that word has been just so overused, but it doesn't mean that they let people walk all over them. Loving people doesn't mean you let people just sit there and let people mistreat you.
No.
And you try to be their best friend. So it's tricky.
And the thing is that can work in the really milder stuff.
Yeah.
Somebody's kind of making fun of your daughter. But it's not like a whole big bullying, a whole group against her.
Yeah.
It can sometimes work to kill them with kindness.
Yeah.
You know, just to get to know them a little bit mm-hmm. and to bring them in to make them see that you're a real person. But in the extreme cases, that's completely ineffective and actually can make it worse.
Yeah.
So really, there isn't a 5 steps on how to protect your children from mean girls that you can't protect your kids from mean girls or from mean people or from mean, mm-hmm. you know, relationships within the family. And then eventually you have to teach your kids about forgiveness.
Yeah.
And forgiveness is hard, hard work.
Yeah.
And when our children have been wronged, they have to actually know what they're forgiving. It's not this general kind of, I just forgive this person. Yeah. That's just a very spiritualized way of just stuffing it down inside because you don't want to deal with all these resentful feelings towards a person who's hurt you deeply. Mm-hmm. But first thing they have to do in the steps towards forgiveness, which we're not going to give you like steps of forgiveness, but just the way, let's put it, to start your child down the path to actual forgiveness of the person who's hurt them, is they have to first decide what it is that they did, how they were wronged. You have to look at it full in the face and say, this girl embarrassed me. She isolated me. She brought kids into her circle and have them reject me. I mean, just as much as you can help her to verbalize what actually happened and the effect it had on you. Yeah, it's not even just the facts. It's the effect that it had on your daughter, and say, I forgive that.
Yeah, to
name even it, if she doesn't want forgiveness.
You can't heal what you can't name.
You know? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You can't heal what you can't name. That's true. So you're going to have to help her name what it is that this mean girl said or did against her. And then I think sometimes the best that our daughters can do, the best that I can do when somebody's really hurt me, is cry out to God and say, Lord, I want to obey you in this whole realm of the way of Jesus is forgiveness. I want to, and ask God that he would just enlarge your heart to be able to love him enough to be able to then turn around and forgive that person when all your feelings are crying out against it. And forgiveness, it does not lead always to reconciliation. Mm-hmm. There are times when your child can work towards forgiveness, knowing that she's never going to be close to this person. It's not safe.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. She can't reconcile the relationship on her own, especially if that person doesn't see what she's doing or it doesn't admit what she's doing.
Yeah.
And that's usually the case.
Usually, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think what can be difficult is when the culture in your home is that you talk about everything,
yeah,
you work things out all the way. We can unintentionally do our kids a disservice, not teaching them the flip side of that, that not everybody is being raised that way or doing that in their home. So we also have to teach them to be able to sit in the tension of unresolved conflict, even when they're not the one, when they're fully willing to resolve it, wanting to resolve it.
Right.
I know my kids are like, well, we just need to talk about it. You just need to call the mom. You just need to
get it on the table.
Yeah. And that doesn't work in it unless the family also communicates like that. And we have to teach them that I know that's what you want to do. That's what would resolve it for you. But I don't think that would be the best thing in this scenario. Or you try and it doesn't work. Teach them, okay, we have to leave it there. They don't want to work it out fully, or they're not able to. And we have to be able to continually forgive and move on, even when it feels like the other side is not doing what we want them to be doing to work it out completely.
Or isn't willing even to be sorry or show any sort of regret about what they've done. And that is forgiving as you've been forgiven.
Yeah.
Realizing that God has forgiven me of so much in Jesus, that the cross stands for my own forgiveness, even things that I've yet to acknowledge or even yet to see. And he's constantly even rescuing me from myself.
Yeah.
So it isn't really ours to pin something on somebody that they're not willing to take.
Yeah.
And that is one of the hardest things about forgiveness. And it takes a long time. We can forgive with our mind and with our will. We make a decision to forgive. But the emotions, those take a long time to catch up with our will. It doesn't mean you haven't forgiven. That doesn't mean your daughter hasn't forgiven. It just means it really still throbs with hurt.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a while. If the other person is not participating in reconciliation, it's just going to take a while.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
I just was thinking about how it's so important that we as parents are aware of our own wounds and relational tendencies. And you think about if when we're wronged in friendship, because it will happen, it does happen. And when we're having a hard time forgiving, it can be so easy to just be blasting the person while we're talking to our spouse. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm guilty mm-hmm. of this. But our kids are listening and they're hearing how we're talking about people who've wronged us or we feel wronged by. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be 9 times out of 10, their natural way that they talk about people, whether just writing them off, all the self-protective things we do, writing them off, defending them, trying to be close to them so that they'll like us, like whatever it looks like for you. We have to be so aware, not that we're going to get it perfectly. We do not have to model it perfectly, but we do have to model this type of relationship and working things out if we want our kids to also do it the same way. Yeah. We can't be blasting the people who've wronged us or frantically trying to get close to them. Those seem to be kind of the two extremes that
or
we do.
Or just maybe another one that I think I'm a professional at is withdrawing.
Yeah.
Just completely withdrawing and not saying anything.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Keep the peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
another one. I'm definitely the professional there.
Yeah.
But I think that's not the way of love. That's not love is that's a passive aggressive sort of approach to being hurt.
Yeah.
And you know what? Our kids are going to get hurt time and time again. They hurt each other. Our kids hurt each other.
Or to add to the messiness of it, more often than not, it's not going to be just this one-sided, the girl was mean. Oftentimes our kid also played a role in either provoking or reacting or, and so it's this messy thing of also having to acknowledge the part that they played without them taking on all the blame of the aggressor.
That's right.
It's just, you've heard me say it a million times, it's messy.
It is messy.
But we have to be willing to engage in the mess, I think is the only way we help our kids through it and help our kids not become it.
And I think in order to help our kids through the mess, we have to make a lot of space for them and their messiness in the mess so that they can know that they're not going to be rejected by us.
No.
They might be coached along and carefully encouraged to change the way they're thinking. But we need to create, and I think moms and dads need to be doing this. Dad needs to be a safe place where a girl can unload on him without him, number one, trying to go, you know, punch the bully in the face. How dare you talk to my daughter like that? Or without him, you know, just trying to solve the problem. Sometimes our children just need to be listened to. I need to be listened to. As an adult, when somebody hurts my feelings, and of course it happens, or says something or writes something or leaves a comment about something, it hurts. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just need to be able to say, "This that really hurt."
Yeah.
So we're trying to really create this kind of atmosphere in our home where the bullying's not happening at home.
Yeah.
When it does happen, there is the asking of forgiveness.
Yeah.
That is that rupture and repair that we talk about. Somebody in our home ruptures a relationship. We as a parent are right on it, making sure that repair really happens. And repair is not, "Oh, I'm sorry." And it's not, "I'm sorry if you took it that way." Repair has to do with that person who ruptured really owning it without excuse and then really working to, you know, repair the relationship. Mm-hmm. And the best way I know to repair a relationship after a rupture is just with words of encouragement. Mm-hmm. Nobody can get enough. noticing something about that person whose feelings you hurt and calling it out in the open. And doing that until that person is able to breathe again.
Yeah.
And feel safe with you again.
Yeah.
Because it happens in our home all the time, in everybody's home. Meanness flares probably at home first before it's going to flare at school.
Yeah.
And if we do nothing, if we say nothing, say if I yell at one of my kids and I justify and I never say, I'm sorry, honey, I should never have raised my voice with you like that. It's not your fault. It's on me. Will you please forgive me? Mm-hmm. And then I work to restore the relationship. That's what needs to be happening. If we then say nothing, then that mm-hmm. just becomes a normal way of life.
Yeah.
So.
And I imagine like the parents listening whose kids are little and they're like,
yeah,
my child is never going to be gentle or empathetic or willingly apologize. I think it's one of those things that we just have to stay patient and stay mm-hmm. the course.
They the brick will, upon brick.
Yes.
Yeah.
They will eventually. Mm-hmm. And it'll take, I promise you, it will take a lot longer than you thought it would or think it should or feel like anybody else's kids yep. are taking.
Yeah.
But it's that idea of brick by brick by brick. You are helping form a human. Mm-hmm. And we can't give up. I know even when it feels like it's not working, when it feels like our kids are going to hate each other forever or nope. they're just, we think that empathy is just not a trait that they have access to.
Yeah.
Like, and that's true in some cases, you know, but in most cases, it just takes a really, really yeah. long time.
Yeah.
And siblings are the most beautiful place for them to get it to is. Learn that, or cousins, or those mm-hmm. in that we're in close relationship with. Mm-hmm. And so to the really tired parent who feels like you're failing, you're not failing. Just wake up again tomorrow and do it again. Mm-hmm. Make them apologize again. Mm-hmm. Your three-year-old is never, ever going to feel like saying, I'm sorry. So if you're waiting for that, mm-hmm. it's probably, I mean, there, well, I've heard there are some three-year-olds who are naturally very empathetic.
Is that right?
I have not okay. raised any of them.
No, I didn't raise any of them
either.
They
do exist. The ones that like you look at them and they think they're in trouble and they cry.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I have had none of those.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that they're unicorns. You know,
I hear stories of Tammy Comer, married to our son, who that was her. And even to this day, boy, who's more empathetic oh. than Tammy? She was the rare one yeah. born with that kind of empathy.
Yeah. And for those kids, I think there's a little greater challenge of like mm-hmm. developing grit and yeah. the ability to put those overwhelming feelings aside sometimes.
Yes. And blame themselves.
It's a yeah. different challenge. It's a different challenge. Yeah. But again, the going back to like exampling that in our own lives, which is so hard when your kid's like overreacting and freaking out, to approach them with empathy before correction. Gosh. It's so hard sometimes.
Or, okay, so you and your husband are having a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it's a friend of ours, mentors of ours called it
heated
an emotional disagreement.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If you're having an emotional disagreement and, you know, you've got a bunch of eyes staring at you, they're watching the whole thing. So what do you do? After you've resolved the emotional disagreement behind closed doors, you come out. How many times, Elizabeth, did you hear me say this? I come out and say, Mom and Dad are okay. We've worked it out. But I spoke disrespectfully to your dad in front of you, and I was wrong. Will you please forgive me? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you're mad still.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so you spoke disrespectfully or meanly because you were hurt or mad or had it. And actually ask forgiveness. You know, it's not perfection our kids need. It's progress, seeing mm-hmm. God transforming us, seeing who we were when they were 5 and now who we are when they're 15. Mm-hmm. And then again, when they're 40 and they see, look, the work that God has done on my mom's life.
Yeah.
She used to be like this on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. And now I can't even get her riled up. She's so settled and at peace. And that is That is a transformation that only the Holy Spirit could ever take credit for. Yeah. And your kids see that, and it validates that, my goodness, Jesus is actually for real. The Spirit really does transform people, even my parents. And that gives them hope for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're looking for a completely safe, perfect little home place where nobody ever gets mad. Nobody ever erupts. Nobody's ever mean. Nobody ever shoves the other person aside.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever selfish. You know, that's not possible. We live in a fallen world and we're fallen people. But creating this kind of a culture where it's not okay.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it means that someday when your child's maybe in college and somebody's being really mean to them and they're really tempted to fire back, mm-hmm. there's that little voice on their shoulder that's mom's voice usually and dad too. It says, don't say it. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. It's wrong for you to do it. And it just might save them from all sorts of breakage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I think this is the journey of following Jesus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no formula for living in a broken world with broken relationships. Mm-hmm. There's walking with Jesus, being filled with the Spirit, asking him for wisdom in mm-hmm. each scenario, which is why we can't give you a step-by-step, this is how you handle each one.
And I think, it's also finding comfort in him when you're really wounded.
Yeah.
By letting them, when they're little, run to mom or climb into daddy's lap and cry those tears. You're modeling for them. You're imprinting on them what they will eventually do, which is run to Jesus and run into the lap of the Father and crawl up on him and say, this hurts. This rejection is horrible. And only you can give me the comfort that I need.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.